Chapter 27.
In the luster of sexual awakening, Marcia is calmer, so filled with the mental benefits of training wheel penetration that she doesn't even notice the Pilgrim Monument in the distance as they round the corner of Route 6 in Truro and see beautiful Provincetown laid out before them. "I wanted to get an abortion," she explains in a strong, confident, no longer ashamed voice. "But where? Where? The only back alley quack I had heard about in our shabby apartment complex had been busted for charging a 15-year-old unwed mother $100 and telling her to swallow gunpowder." Lester lets out a low-pitched puppy moan and pulls out a can of Halt dog repellent from under the seat. "I had read in the local library," Marcia continues, "that in the olden days, Egyptian women ate crocodile feces to cause miscarriages. But where was I supposed to get crocodile feces in Dutch Village?" Lester huffs a few blasts of the animal repellent and offers her some. She politely declines his magic vapors and resumes her pro-choice tale of woe as he turns off the highway at Stotts Crossing, the fumes invading his libido with hot canine deterrent. "Sure, there was a reptile house at the Baltimore Zoo," she reasons, daring to caress Lester's chiseled chin softly for the first time. "But you couldn't just reach in a pit and grab a gator turd, could you?" Lester may be buzzed from the scorching extracts of pepper fumes tearing through his clean, trim nostrils, but he spots the dog first, the very same dog they saw earlier on the highway that practically leapt from its owner's moving vehicle into Lester's truck. Right there, still leashed, struggling to escape its masters, who are moving their bags and beach supplies into one of those Monopoly-style cottages that are all in a row on Route 6A before you get into Provincetown. Lester swerves his truck over, and just as his blood vessels peak in dilation, giving him the ultimate canine-human head rush, he shoots a liquid stream of Halt right into the dad's eyes. The mother goes crazy, shouting something about cruelty to animals, and the children try to restrain the dog, who's again in a frenzy. Dad is staggering blindly, rubbing his eyes, and almost gets hit by a passing car. Now's the dog's chance. It charges with all its might, jumps up on a picnic table, and propels itself through the air into the open passenger side window of Lester's truck, landing in Marcia's lap, then freezes. "Some of them just know," Lester explains. Marcia is so stunned to have an actual dog in her lap that all she can do is mumble, "Good boy." She's not sure who she means. Lester? The dog? Both of them? Lester peels out and speeds by what used to be the old Holiday Inn. Then he spots an unleashed cocker spaniel wearing some kind of pussy hat, barking its head off at its female owners, who think their pet's rage is political, like theirs. Lester takes out an animal tranquilizer gun and fires the dart right into the dog's supposedly empowered ass. The couple shouts gaze against guns slogans before breaking down in sobs over this attempted pet murder in what has been called the dog-friendliest town in America. Lester pulls over, ignores their theatrics, scoops up the dog's unconscious body like the professional he is, gently tosses it in the back of the truck, gets back in, and pulls off. "Some of the other dogs can't comprehend yet," he explains to Marcia. "I have to show them the proper way." Marcia looks down at the rescued dog in her lap and identifies. She, too, must learn Lester's truth. As he turns a hard right onto a dirt road next to a two-car garage with a misguided imitation of Warhol's Marilyn painted on its double doors, Marcia continues her saga of labor lunacy. "I gave birth to the mutant daughter of a cumrag rimmer," she announces, "for all nature to hear." Instantaneously, the other angry dogs, who have seemingly converted to the pack mentality of Alpha Lester, run out of the woods, howling a welcome to their arriving Pied Piper. "It was a humiliating, repulsive event," Marcia bellows, as the crazed canines begin running alongside the truck, and even her new lapdog joins in the chorus of hellhounds. It feels like the dogs are actually on Marcia's side for the first time ever. Lester lets out his own low-pitched dog moan that can only mean her storytelling must continue. Poppy ripped me open when I was still technically a virgin, and no man, except you today, has ever been allowed back inside, she admits, with a sexual honesty that drives Lester crazy with unneutered lust. The winds of her truth, combined with the fresh breeze of Lester's acceptance, howl through the nearby dunes and form tiny tornadoes of rebellion, which alert other angry dogs that it is safe to rise up and join their cause. Marcia looks up and sees Lester's doghouse, his compound of canine retribution, the castle kennel of mongrel behavioral modification. Lester Barnhill is king, and she, Marcia Sprinkle, will become his rightful queen. Lester swerves his dog-catching truck to a screeching stop, and immediately, awaiting irate tourists jump out of their vehicles, yelling accusations of pet napping and illegal confinement, but he pays them no mind. Who are they going to call? He is the authority when it comes to animal control in this town, and many of the townies fear the power Lester has over their own one-time obedient pets and have learned to keep their traps shut. Besides, Provincetown has always been a radical place. Revolutionary ideas breed here. He flips a remote and the formidable razor wire gate to the Villa of Dog Deprogramming swings open. It is a ramshackle chateau reformatory made of rotting lumber, discarded carpeting, corroded steel caging, and torn down roofing rescued from the town dump before it got all highfalutin. The dogs inside start howling and born-again revolt, but their owners misunderstand and believe they are crying out to be rescued. You stole my dog, cocksucker, a furious man yells in front of his crybaby children. Max was on a leash, a woman begs with a tear-streamed face. I want my puppy back, shouts a teenager in a Dolphin Fleet Whale Watch sweatshirt as he shoots a rock from a slingshot towards Lester, just missing him. The dog in Marcia's lap has heard the cries of insurrection inside and is eager to join the uprising. He springs to action through the open truck window, charges the idiot who dared to fire the missile, and bites him hard on the hand. Oh, you'll get your dogs back all right, shouts Lester, as the pussy hat couple speed up in their truck, jump out, and start yelling something about male aggression and animal sensitivity. The now-coming-to Cocker Spaniel must hear its owner's female rants, because just as Lester opens the truck's door to grab Marcia's hand and lead her inside, the suddenly vengeful dog leaps from the back, jumps to the ground, struggles instantly to rip off its pussy hat, and charges its owners with a ferocity they've never witnessed. How dare these women force her to wear millinery? The two so-called animal lovers jump back in their vehicle and lock their doors in fear as their dog jumps up on the hood and snaps off the windshield wipers with her newly empowered paws. Once inside his dog re-education camp, Lester gives Marcia a tour. Here you go, he whispers to an especially angry basset hound inside a cage in the front hall as he holds up a photo of the pet's owners outside and activates the electric shock transmitter around its neck. The dog howls in masochistic pleasure and lunges toward the picture of his so-called guardians practicing his future attack. Marcia looks around in awe at the wall-to-wall animal holding cells lining the living room, made from invisible fencing that zaps these former pets, now soldiers in training, every time they try to run toward photographs of their previous homes, which Lester had printed out from Google Maps. She's impressed. These dogs are learning. Lester has harnessed their natural pack mentality and turned their past obedience into righteous revenge. She likes these angry creatures. Maybe one of them will bite off her ex's tool of penetration. I was raised as a dog, Lester suddenly blurts out to Marcia, telling his truth now and begging with hound dog eyes for her to understand. Why? Why? He shouts to the heavens above. I'll tell you why. My parents thought animals were cheaper to raise than babies, he remembers in never-ending resentment, somehow maintaining his masculine composure while still showing a sexy vulnerability. Marcia gapes at a mongrel in another cage, angrily shredding its own collar, while strobing lights program him in disorienting sounds of distorted pet talk babbled by his supposed human mommy and daddy pound in his eardrums. Teaching an animal to view its owner as its enemy is the way Mother Nature intended, Marcia realizes, more enlightened as each second with Lester passes. Yes, control must be recaptured by the canines and used for human retribution. Maybe life is fair. I had to eat dog food as a child, Lester bitterly confesses, as he opens a mini-fridge, takes out a juicy bone, and gnaws off a hunk of raw beef gristle. What did I know? Purina tasted good to me, he wails, before politely offering Marcia a bite. For the first time, she feels an urge for more solid food. She knows a dog biscuit would be the closest thing to a cracker he might have on hand, but it's no longer enough. She grabs the bone from his hand and bravely nibbles off a hunk of marrow. It tastes hearty and vigorous, and chewing it up is suddenly sexual. The beginning of a new kind of digestion energizes her body. Had she missed out on the most primal thrill of all, one that both dogs and humans have experienced forever? The breaking down of food into smaller and smaller components and then releasing it? Can Marcia actually defecate now without shame? No more pellets. It's time to fire off a fudge dragon. Maybe she and Lester can do it together. I was crated, Lester howls to Marcia like the top dog he is here today. Crated, he repeats in a lower pitch growl that makes Marcia stir in her happy hunting ground. And I still am, he snarls as he leads her into his bedroom. Marcia is at first terrified of the ferocious three dogs that await Lester in his crate-like sleeping quarters. Their eyes are afire with contempt, the only dogs left allowed to have a master, the supreme one, Lester himself. Dare she pet one? Go ahead, he growls, reading her mind. The Labrador Retriever's name is Baxter. Marcia reaches her hand out, and the dog doesn't flinch. She touches his fur. It feels rough, but somehow right, and a certain moisture begins flowing through her private parts. My father claimed he could speak in a special dialect that was part baby talk, part growling that dogs could actually understand, he explains in an odd new accent, taking off his jacket to reveal strong arms and a Doberman Gang movie promotional t-shirt. I can speak that language today, he boasts as he whispers in her ear, nonsensical syllables mixed with guttural yelps. The three guard dogs bark back. That means they agree, he sensually murmurs in a human voice as he slips off her blouse and she melts into what's next, bra removal arousal. What's this falling to the floor? His driver's license. His very being being smuggled into hers. Dare she allow this fusion? Yes, second base, hot diggity dog diggity. Her nipples sassily twitch all on their own, signaling she's finally willing to become one with Lester without fear. He turns to the large boxer named Travis and speaks another guttural sentence mixed with gurgling and yelping. The dog's eyes light up like the one in Village of the Damned, and he howls back what sounds like a terrifying reply. I asked him if he is ready to take my final orders, Lester translates as Marcia slips out of her skirt. He answered, gurwoof, gurwoof, which means onward in doggies, he explains as his breathing, both human and canine, rapidly becomes a pant. Turning to Draco, the white bull terrier who waits for Lester's deadliest commands, he asks in both languages, "Will you bring us revenge?" The volume of the snarl, the ferocity of the animal's growl, is so staggering that Marcia doesn't need further translation. It's the final battle. I learned to be a bad dog, Lester growls in half-dog, half-human English, as he strips off his uniform pants to reveal a slender waist, surprisingly muscular thighs, and a bulge inside his worn but seemingly freshly laundered plain white boxer shorts. Marcia is in the presence of a penis, and for the first time, she welcomes such a member. Finally, a man faces her from the front like she's a real woman, not from behind like that ex-husband of hers, who was a bad dog too, but the wrong kind. Woof, yip, yip, woof, woof, she hesitantly answers Lester, hoping he will translate for the dogs if they can't understand her first attempts at this crossover language. But they do understand. So does Lester. Heel in either language is no longer a dog command. It's a secret word that signals sexual consent, and they all howl it out with a bilingual savagery. First, I chewed up my father's slippers, Lester bow-wows in a heavily accented canine voice as he boldly thrusts his rather wide human appendage up and down her panty-covered pudendum, exploring new territories of anti-doggy-style sexual positioning. Yes, up front, Marcia moans, mentally erasing her ex-husband's rear entry. I bit the hand that fed me, he growls, in full doggies, and yes, Marcia, now humanly aroused, can translate into English all by herself, thank you very much. Down, boys, she continues in their secret language, and Lester obeys, pulling off her panties with sharp, nibbling teeth as the three guard dogs begin howling and panting, proud their kennel commander can enter a bitch, and they mean this term in a respectful animal world way, with a hard penis, unlike themselves, who must wait for theirs to expand once inside the female. Mount me, Marcia says twice, once in each tongue, happy to be in control again. But this time it's different. She's a power bottom now, and it feels fucking great. Caressing, probing, and aiming properly, Lester pushes his bad dog penis between her legs, and it's not the home invasion she always feared. He's in the doghouse now, in front of her, so she can see what's going on, not behind her in a place so dirty it required cleaning up to 3 times a day. We were both abused, Lester whispers, still inside her, staying in lane, accelerating and braking at a steady speed. In, out, not like that burger place in L.A., but like a souped-up piston that grinds to perfection. She's the master. He's the Johnson, and together they redefine human sexual response. Marcia lets out a dog yowl so authentic that Lester joins in, and so do the three guard dogs. Thrashing in pleasure, Lester continues to thrust and bark like the animal she's now glad he's become. The other dogs in the house start howling, too, in savage celebration, building along with Marcia and Lester as they pant their way to sexual unity. Just before Lester is ready to detonate inside her, he reaches up and pushes a nearby button, and all the cages in the rest of the doghouse electronically fly open. Baxter, Travis, and Draco stampede out, wildly excited that the time has finally come for them to be leaders of the pack. The other re-educated dogs bound from their cages, baring their fangs, eager for the blood of their one-time masters. There are no safe words to halt what is about to come. Dog Armageddon. As Marcia hears the first screams outside, she explodes in dogasmic spasms of euphoria. So this is what it feels like to be alive. The warrior goddess of hate has finally found love. Part dog, part human, they are now united in truth.